I am Alyssa Atkins, the Training and Development Coordinator for the Native Learning Center. Today on the show, we are excited to have Rosario Mendez, the Attorney Division of Consumer and Business Education, Federal Trade Commission. We also have Joni Wei, the Assistant Director of Federal Trade Commission's Midwest Regional Office. So thank you so much for being here today. They are going to share their expertise on everyday scammers trying to steal money from people. If you know what scams look like, you'll be better prepared to avoid them. In this podcast, you'll learn about the work of the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, to protect consumers from fraud and scams. You will also get advice on how to spot and avoid common scams, such as impersonator scams, online shopping scams, prizes, and lottery scams. Last but not least, hear how you can help stop scams in your community by reporting what you experienced to the FTC. With that being said, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, I'll start. My name is Rosario Mendez, and as Oista said, I am an attorney in the Division of Consumer and Business Education in the Bureau of Consumer Protection of the Federal Trade Commission. And Joni is going to talk a little bit more about what the Federal Trade Commission is in a little bit. But I wanted to let you know that in my office, we want to make sure that people have information to be better consumers, to make better decisions in the marketplace, to know how to avoid and you know, spot frauds and scams. And we have a lot of that information on our website at consumer.ftc.gov, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later on. So, Joni?
Thank you. Thank you, Rosario and Oista. Thank you so much for having us. We're thrilled to be here. My name is Joni Wei, and I am the Assistant Director of the Federal Trade Commission's office in Chicago. It's the Midwest Regional Office. And I've been in this position for a long time, and the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, has offices throughout the country. So our focus in the Midwest region is on 11 states in the Midwest region.
But I was just saying that it's so interesting that you guys have FTC everywhere, so you can able to help anyone that needs it at any given time.
Yeah, it's really great, actually, that the FTC, we are headquartered in DC, but we have 8 regional offices throughout the country, which is great. And each regional office is assigned to a number of states. And in those states, we're able to focus on building relationships and partnerships with other agencies and community organizations. And it really helps us to reach more consumers across the country.
Do you get that personal connection?
That's right. That's
perfect.
Right.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and jump in with some questions that I have for you. The first question is, what is the Federal Trade Commission and how does it protect consumers?
So I'll answer that one. And Rosario, please feel free to jump in if I miss anything. But the Federal Trade Commission is the nation's consumer protection agency. So what does that mean? It means that it's our job, it's our mission to protect consumers from deceptive, fraudulent and unfair business practices. That's very broad. So when you say fraud, consumer protection and fraud, it means a lot of things. It's very broad. It can mean situations where somebody lies to you and deceives you. For example, if you pay me money, I'm going to, modify your mortgage. When that doesn't happen, that's obviously a lie. It can be, take these pills, you'll lose 25 pounds. Not true. That's deceptive. But our mission also includes things that aren't necessarily lies and deception, like consumer issues. Let's say something on your credit report is wrong and you can't seem to get it fixed. That might not be deception, but it's a huge problem and it impacts consumers. That's within our purview as well. The FTC's work touches on the economic lives of everyone. And to give you a sense of how broad the work is, I want to just give a few other examples. Robocalls and the do not call list. We all get those annoying robocalls. That falls under our purview. Income scams, you know, you're given an opportunity to make money that doesn't come, you know, to pass. That's within our purview. Buying and selling, the purchase of a car. Privacy, the privacy of your data, identity theft, you know, advertisements, all that. It's very, very broad. Another thing that the FTC does is what we call preventing anti-competitive practices. We're not really focused on that in today's podcast, but it's also another important part of our mission. And that part of the mission includes trying to prevent practices that lead to higher prices, fewer choices, and less innovation. So what exactly does the FTC do? Well, we look into problems. We identify problems. We do that by getting reports from people, doing our own investigations, looking at industries and looking at trends. And then we sue companies and individuals that are engaged in these practices. We sue them in federal court. We try to stop them from doing it. And we try to get as much money as we can back to consumers. We also develop rules because we're an expert agency. We will develop rules that'll help govern the way companies and people can act. So, for example, the telemarketing sales rule is a very important rule that the FTC enacted that governs the kind of telemarketing that people can engage in. And it includes the robocalls that I mentioned a minute ago. And then another very important part of our mission is educating consumers and businesses and about rights, about responsibilities. And this is really important, which part of our goal. And it's why we're so grateful for the opportunity to talk to you today on this podcast. While law enforcement cases and in court, they're really important for a lot of reasons. If we can prevent consumers from getting harmed, every single consumer we can prevent from getting scammed is a victory. And it's really important and truly would be the best result. So the FTC, we've always worked for all consumers, but something that research and experience has made really clear to us is that fraud doesn't impact every community in the same way. It can disproportionately target or impact certain communities differently. So if we want to fulfill our, and that includes tribal communities for sure. And if we want to achieve our goal, we have to research this problem. We have to research the issue. We have to bring cases that are targeting or impacting these communities. And we have to connect with the communities and share information and help people prevent, to prevent people from losing money to these scams and frauds. So when we collaborate and work with organizations like yours, it's really, it will go such a long way towards getting that information out. If we have time, I want to share one example of a case that really reflects great collaboration, a great case, and a great result for tribal communities.
Of course.
Thank you. It's a case called Tate's Auto. And what happened was in 2012, the Navajo Nation Human Rights Commission conducted some public hearings about predatory auto sales tactics. So they had people come in and talk about experiences with auto sales or auto purchases. And after those hearings, they found a lot of complaints and problems with a particular dealership group called Tate's Auto. And they gave that information to the FTC. And we ended up suing this group of dealerships in Arizona and New Mexico. And we alleged that they were falsifying income and down payment information. They were engaged in some deceptive advertising and they weren't disclosing things that they were supposed to disclose under the law. And the end result of this case was that we're able to send $415,000 back to consumers, to 3,508 consumers. And it's just a great example of somebody bringing us this really important issue. And we were able to luckily bring this case and achieve this result. So that's just one example of both the collaboration and the law enforcement piece working together.
It looks like Rosario, she got kicked off. So hopefully she'll join back in.
Yeah.
But thank you for telling us about that survey, but the study. That is extremely interesting. It just comes to show you that you may think a daily inconvenience you're having, such as false advertising, is just another part of your day. You just ignore it, delete it. But if you report it, you can actually be helping in a bigger picture. And so that's really great that we can go to the FTC for that, to go like, hey, I got this, and then it turns out that in the bigger picture, you helped tons of people get their money back. And that's actually like really great that the consumers were able to have somebody hear them and help them.
Yeah, and I know Rosario was going to cover this later in the podcast, but the importance of reporting these issues to us, we just want to hear about them because this is how we learn from the communities about what's happening on the ground, on the front lines, what people are experiencing. And one thing we learned through our research is not every community reports to the FTC at the same level. Some communities report to us, others don't know to, or they feel uncomfortable or are nervous to report. Mm-hmm. And the message we like to share is that it's so important to report to us, and we do, it doesn't go into a black hole. We do look at this, these complaints. There's this very large database that we have with millions of complaints in them, and we mine them, we look for trends, and other law enforcement across the country are able to access that database too. And let's say they, for example, someone complains to them about an entity and doing something, then they can look in the database and try to see, is this a bigger problem? So yeah, we really encourage people to report to us.
Yeah, so that way you have the database be, oh, this is a reoccurring problem, this is an issue, this is something we need to take a deeper dive into. So that's great that the FTC does hold those falsified companies accountable. I do think that's amazing, because a lot of time it seems like people just get a slap on the wrist, but that's great to hear.
Yeah, we try to enter these orders where, and the orders have these provisions in them that hopefully prevent the company from engaging in it again in the future.
Oh, okay, good. So in a sense, it flags them, so they're unable to engage in such activities again.
Yeah, so a lot of times the FTC's orders, you know, we try to get the money that if they took money from consumers wrongfully, we try to get that money and give it back. But we also have these provisions in these orders that say, okay, you can't do this anymore. You can't do that. You cannot lie about this. You cannot. And there, we call them injunctive provisions, which is, but essentially it means in the future, you know, we've caught you doing this in the future. Don't do this again. And if you do, you will be, what happens is they will be subject to what we call civil penalties for violating that order. So the hope is that we can prevent it from happening. The other important thing is it will hopefully show other companies engaged in the same kind of conduct that we will go after them and we will hold them accountable.
Hopefully they're afraid enough not to. The hope.
Yes.
Well, it looks like she's not back on yet, but I'm going to go ahead and ask you the second question. What are some common scammer tactics? I know you mentioned the robocall. Is there anything else, any other tactics that really stand out that you've noticed?
Yeah, there's a few common things. Four major signs that almost every scam suffers, or that is a characteristic of almost every scam. First of all, they pretend to be from an organization that you know. So one really common one is they pretend to be from the government. So they might say they're from Social Security, they're from IRS, it's Medicaid related, it's your utility company, it's Amazon calling you. So they're going to pretend like they're from a company that you know. Is Rosario trying to join back?
She is.
There's always a, here's Rosario. There's always a problem or some kind of prize. Oh, hey, Rosario.
Welcome back.
Oh my gosh, sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. I'm so glad you got back in. I do apologize for technical difficulties, but Joni was just answering on question two. What are some common scammers' tactics?
Great.
Rosario, I don't know if you want to jump in, but I was just telling Oista that the first thing is they always pretend to be from an organization you know. The second thing we were just about to talk about is there's always some kind of problem or prize. I don't know if you want to jump in and go from there, or do you want me to finish?
Yeah, sure. That is exactly right. I mean, they always say that there's some kind of problem, or they can say that there's a prize, that if you click on this link, you're going to get, you know, a free gift card to a store, or they may say that you're in trouble with the government and that you owe money. It's always a sense of urgency, for positive or negative, you know, that something bad is going to happen and you have to act right away, or that something good is going to happen to you, but you got to act right away to get it, you know, and they want your money and they want your information. And that sense of urgency is one of the main tactics because, you know, they put people on edge, you know, they want you to act before you even get a chance to think about what you're doing, that you're giving your personal information to a stranger or that you're paying with, you know, different methods like cryptocurrency or gift cards. And those are all ways that scammers ask you to pay, which is another sign of a scam, how they ask you to pay. Scammers like asking for wire transfers, for gift cards, for cryptocurrency, like I said. And it's because those methods are pretty much untraceable. It's like paying with cash. Once you pay that way, your money is gone. If you realize that you were scammed or that there had been a problem on the other end, there's no way to get your money. And that's why they ask for those payment methods. So that is something to really, really be on the lookout. If you are talking to someone on the phone, for example, that calls you and tells you that there's, you know, a problem or that you can win something, but it's asking you to pay before before anything in one of these ways, like using a wire transfer or by cryptocurrency or by paying with gift cards, those are all signs of a scam. You can bet that you're talking to a scammer at that point.
So they really pry on emotion, and the verbiage that they use is very urgent, immediate, must take action. And it puts you in that heightened state. And so you act on it without realizing, oh, this is a scam. So what are ways, how would you deal with such a situation? Because I get those text messages all the time. Hey, Susie, I'm at the office. Clearly, I know Susie's not at the office. What would I do in an instance like that, or any other individual in an instance like that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. They try to get to those fears and to that sense of urgency. And I think the first thing to do is to take a step back, to stop. If you find yourself in a situation where you're giving your personal information, where you are clicking to supposedly, you know, give your financial information because you need to renew, they tell you need to renew your account or something like that, and you didn't expect it, stop. Think about it for a second. Maybe talk to someone else if in doubt, because a lot of times it sounds real, right? If someone is calling you and saying, you know, your Amazon account it needs to be renewed, you're going to be kicked out if you don't do it right now. You're like, wait, I want my Amazon account. Or if it's the government, you know, supposedly calling you and saying you're going to be arrested if you don't pay for this fee, you know, you probably think about, my gosh, I need to pay this. But it's best to stop and talk to someone else. When you talk to someone else about something like that, chances are that that person may know that this is a scam already, or even by you expressing what's happening, you can sense, you know, that, wait, the government is not going to call me and ask me to pay with gift cards, you know, or wait, let me check my Amazon account first to see if there's a problem before I pay someone that just called me or emailed me or texted me, because we see that those messages over text as well. So it's just kind of like maybe stopping and thinking about it. And then, you know, there are things that you can do also by doing a little bit of research. You know, if it has to do with your account, maybe look up the account like I suggested, or if they're saying that they're saying that they're calling from, you know, a specific company, maybe do some research to see if that specific company actually exists and what is the, you know, and do you actually owe them money? Those are things that you can do, you know, to avoid paying, you know, for a scam. And just being aware and talking about it with other people helps, because your experience is going to help others.
Sounds perfect.
Something I always tell people, which is unfortunate, but the way we have to live right now is we have to be vigilant about everything, because scams are everywhere, and they are coming at us by email, by text, ads pop up, social media, it's just everywhere. So I always tell my family and friends, view everything suspiciously. And it's a frustrating way to have to live. But the truth is, that is just how anybody asking you for anything, I tell people to just view with suspicion and pause. And like Rosario said, run a quick search. Search the thing, it's the term or the company or the person on Google along with the word scam or complaint or fraud. And usually, if it is a scam, something will pop up and give you pause. But
that's right. You can do that with phone numbers too. You know, you can Google the phone number that's calling you, you know, with the word scam or fraud, and then you can see if other people are getting calls from that same number. Mm-hmm. And one important point is, if you do see something, it's really important to report it. You reporting fraud to the FTC is so important, because that is the one way that we have to know what's going on in communities. And it's very easy to do at reportfraud.ftc.gov. And what happens when you file a report with the FTC of that website is that it goes to a database called the Consumer Sentinel. And that database is accessed by other law enforcement agencies around the country and also internationally. About around 3,000 organizations, law enforcement organizations, access that database. And that helps with collaboration and in investigations, right? So for example, if there is a case that Joni is working in the Midwest region, investigating one company, but then like the New York Attorney General, for example, is also investigating that organization, then they can see the same complaints in that database, and they can collaborate, you know, to try to stop, you know, the bad practice. And so that also, that helps stop, you know, the bad practices from the law enforcement perspective. And it also helps with, for us to spot trends and see what kind of things scammers are doing, what kind of new tricks they have up their sleeve, you know, what are the new claims that they're making, so that we can alert people. And we use our consumer alerts for that. So we issue consumer alerts pretty much every day, one or two, or sometimes even three a day, letting people know what kind of scams we're seeing, what kind of problems we are seeing, so that they can be on the lookout. And when they receive that call, or when they see that text message, they're like, wait, I know this is a scam. I'm not gonna click on that link. I'm not gonna answer. I'm gonna hang up the phone. And that is very important. So those reports give us this information so that we can alert others and help stop the scams in the communities.
So because you have individuals reporting, I know we talked about the database earlier. So because you have individuals reporting about the same issue, you're able to look at that and you actually let people know that, you know, recently we've seen a spike of people, you know, reporting this, keep a lookout for this phone number, email, such and such.
That's right.
Oh, so that's really nice that you get a little heads up so that way you can look out for it.
So for example, last year we received about 5.7 million reports in 2021. So that's all the reports that we got last year. And we are able to tell from that amount that people reported to us losing $5.9 billion to fraud. So that's what they people reported to us. That's a lot of money. And we do know that fraud goes underreported, not everyone reports, right? And so that's all the information that we know. So from that data, we're able to know some things. We're able to know that identity theft is the top, you know, consumer complaint that we received last year. The second one was imposter scams, for example, impersonator scams. We talked a little bit about that. So we do know that is an issue. And then we can drill down a little bit more about like the different, you know, what communities they're targeting, you know, who are they, you know, how are they doing their scams, and all that helps us alert people about it and also do law enforcement cases, as I mentioned earlier.
So see something, say something.
That's right.
Okay. Next time I see it, I will say something.
That's great. Even if you don't fall for it, like hopefully you didn't fall for it, but you're like, wait, I
thankfully
had it. We want to hear about that too.
Okay, I certainly will. I get a lot of phone calls. So my next question that I have is kind of just talked about it, but how do you spot common scams such as impersonator scams, online shopping scams, and fake prizes, lotteries, and sweepstakes? I know you talked about it's more the verbiage, how they talk to you, it's an emergency, either good or bad. Is there anything else that we can kind of take away from that's kind of like a red flag?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when it comes to impersonator scams, like, you know, people pretending to be from the government or from, you know, another business, I think it's just really important to remember not to give information or money to someone that calls you out of the blue or that sends you a text or an email. Just requesting information, to take a step back, as I mentioned, and just stop and analyze the situation. Also, never to make a payment to someone that you don't know, you know, without confirming, doing some research. And, you know, finally, just to really make sure that you check things out, you know, that you look at that government agency's website to see if they are really, you know, and call the number and that website to release to see if there's a problem, or, you know, check out your account, you know, before you make any payment. I think those are all very important things to do before, you know, you pay anyone or you know, to try to avoid paying a scammer. Jody, do you want to talk about like a lottery and sweepstakes?
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, I'm happy
there's
to
lottery advice on that as well. Mm-hmm.
Lottery and sweepstakes scams are so common. There are some classic characteristics of them. You usually will get a call or email or letter saying you've won a sweepstakes, a lottery, or a prize, like an iPad or a car or money. But you can tell that it's a scam. There's one key thing that they always ask you to do if it's a scam, and that's they ask you to pay money or give your account information so you can collect your prize. So the thing is, and if you pay, of course, you won't get the prize. The thing is, this is what you have to really watch out for. The number one, as I mentioned, the paying thing. And they always tell you, or they often tell you, that paying will increase your odds of winning. Of course, this is not true. And you always have to give some kind of financial information. These scams are so prevalent. I brought a case some years back against a sweepstakes operation out of California. But what amazed me was the breadth of their operation. They sent, it was just a small company in Ventura, California, but they sent 3.7 million letters to people in the course of 2 years to 156 countries. Every letter was very professionally made. It looked really like, truly like you had won something. And they usually asked you to pay a small fee to collect your money, $20 to $30. And they were in all different languages. They sent letters to Japan, France, so on, all over the world. And this person made over $11 million just from collecting these small payments for sweepstakes fraud. And so it's very prevalent, and they're professionals. These letters look very, very real. So people should really watch out for them. And you tend to get swept up in some of the promises that are made in these letters, and it seems so easy. You just mail a small fee. But
yeah, one important thing to remember with prizes and sweepstakes is that if you have to pay, then it's not a prize, because a prize is free, right? Or if you win a sweepstakes, then it should be free. Like, you shouldn't have to pay in order to collect your prize. So that should be like the first sign that this is a scam. And like Joni said, I mean, some of these letters and even websites as well that we see now are very sophisticated, and they look very real. For example, during the COVID pandemic, we did see websites that pretended to be affiliated with the government, saying that there would be, you know, a free COVID test, or that they could get you. This is like when we couldn't get the vaccine, not everyone was getting the vaccine, but they would pretend to say that they could get you enrolled, especially, you know, with maybe Medicare patients, that we can get you enrolled before. And all of that is, you know, trying to make it sound like they are affiliated with the government or that they have, you know, some legitimacy. But if you have to pay in order to, you know, for things that are free, then that's definitely a sign of a scam. With prices, with sweepstakes, you know, with government services that are completely free, if they say that you have to pay in order to get that benefit, then stop. Don't do it, because you're going to lose your money to a scam.
It's funny you say it, because I was thinking the same exact thing that you were. I cannot think of the last time that I had to pay for a prize. Prizes are normally free. So in the case of a situation like an Amazon call or another well-known company, best idea is hang up, Google the correct phone number, call them and ask them, is this true? I just spoke to somebody. Easiest way to find out if it's a scam. The lottery is a little bit trickier, but like you said, if you have to pay, then obviously it's not.
Well, and also with the lottery is, you know, we still see a lot of like foreign lottery, like you won the lottery in Spain, you know, and it's sort of like, well, why would I, you know, I wasn't right in Spain, I didn't apply for it, you know, so that's also, you know, sort of thinking about that. Like if you didn't apply, you know, if you didn't even, you know, participate in a lottery, you get a message out of the blue. You can bet that that's probably a scam. It's someone trying to get your information, your personal information or your money. I mean, sometimes they want the personal information because what they do is that they, you know, they send a message, for example, a text message or an email, ask, and then you click, and what they want to collect, you know, your name, your address, your social security, your, you know, your email, and all of that, information combined is a minefield for, you know, identity thieves. Like that's the information that they value. So it's really important to protect your information before you give it out, you know, to a source that you're not really sure that came an email that came out of the blue, to stop and think about it before you do that. And the other thing that I wanted to comment on the prices and the sweepstakes is that, you know, you still see them on websites and pop-ups, for example. And then you also see them still in mailers, like Joni was talking about. So it is pretty prevalent. I wonder if there are people in, you know, your audience in tribal communities that are receiving this kind of mailers, for example, for sweepstakes and things. And if they are, you know, they can report it to the Federal Trade Commission to see.
Well, great minds think alike, because I was just about to ask you, how can we, if any of our tribal members or anyone and is having these issues, how can we report to the FTC? Where could we go? How can we be heard?
Yes, I think that's really important. And Joni, if you want to add something on that about being heard and the importance of it, it's so important. And we want to hear those reports. We want people to report to the Federal Trade Commission at reportfraud.ftc.gov. It's the easiest way to do it. It's a website that is managed by the FTC, reportfraud.ftc.gov. And when you go there, the system is going to ask you a few questions about what happened to you. And you can report anything, things like, you know, you had problems online shopping, or, you know, you received a call that turned out to be a fake call from a government imposter, or from a fake call from a family member. Sometimes scammers pretend to be your family members that are, you know, in trouble to get your money. Or, you know, you had a situation where you fell for a job scam or some kind of money-making opportunity that turned out to be bogus. All of those things, auto sales, auto repairs, you know, problems with your phone internet service, you know, any consumer problem that you have, you can report it to reportfraud.ftc.gov. As I mentioned, the system is going to ask you a few questions about what happened, but it's very simple to answer those questions. You can do it on your cell phone. You can do it on a computer. And questions are related to, you know, who called you? What's the name of the company? Who did they say they were? What phone number did you, or you know, did you pay? How did you pay? You know, just questions to guide, you know, what happened. And then at the end, you're going to have an opportunity to, in your own words, explain, you know, if something of the questions weren't really appropriate to your situation and you wanted just to tell your story, you have an opportunity to do that. And then at the end, when you submit your report, you'll receive some advice from the FTC. So you receive some advice on what to do if you paid a scammer, you know, how to get your money back or how to try to get your money back. And, you know, just different advice on, you know, moving forward. So it's just an easy way to report fraud. It's very important to do it. You're going to be helping your community. You're going to be helping others when you report it, because that, like as we said, that helps us investigate, stop scammers, alert people, and all of that. It's going to, you know, amount to helping the community in general.
Well, thank you so much for letting us know where to go, see something, say something. I will be telling everyone that from now on. Thank you both so much for being here today. Is there anything else you would like to add real quick?
Jenny, anything?
Nothing to add other than we really appreciate the time today, because the more we talk about these scams, the more we can prevent them. Because if somebody hears, oh, wait, I heard something about sweepstakes, I'm going to pause before I act and click on something. Any little thing will make a difference. So we really appreciate this platform to be able to share some information. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you so much. As always, it's a pleasure to have both of you. And thank you so much again, Rosario, for setting this up. This is just, we are so grateful for you guys to talk about this, because like you said, it is very, it's a very big and prevalent thing. So to have awareness on it is great. So thank you so much again.
Oh, Isabel, let me tell you one more thing before we go. People can sign up to receive our consumer alerts on their email.
Perfect.
And to sign up, you go to ftc.gov/consumer alerts. So that's ftc.gov/consumer alerts. When you go to that website, you can put your email and then you'll get our consumer alerts on a daily basis or whenever, you know, we publish them.
Oh, great. So that's how you get the alerts that if somebody reports something multiple times, you send that out to everybody via email so they're aware of it.
That's right. And sometimes we hear from people, you know, about scams and problems, you know, from the news or, you know, from other sources other than the complaints. So we are always trying to, you know, be on the forefront of the scams and alert people about them.
Well, thank you so much for that. Hopefully everyone who is watching this will be able to either report it or sign up for the email so they are aware of it. Thank you again so much for today.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.